Hey, this is Jason from Death Therapy, and this is my next chapter on As the Story Grows.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, we welcome back Jason Wisdom for his fourth time on the show. But it's my first time getting to talk to Jason, so I was excited to have him on. We pick up where Travis left off, talking about Death Therapy's second record, Voices, and the differences in recording that album versus their debut, The Storm Before the Calm. We also talk about the two new EPs Jason is working on, and his book. There will be a link in the show notes to Jason's previous episodes if you're curious about his history and the formation of Death Therapy and a breakdown of The Storm Before the Calm. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's chat with Jason Wisdom. This is my defiance. So I went back and listened to your chats with Travis just to see what ground you guys had covered. Last time you were on was right after, or I guess right before Storm Before the Calm was released, and you did that record track by track. Since then, you put out your second record on Solid State called Voices. You talk a little bit about the differences between your first album and Voices.
Yeah, Voices is a little bit more of a natural sounding album for me. I come from a metalcore background, played in Becoming the Archetype for 12 years, and the first album was very like a serious departure from that. I almost forced myself into a box, and I said, there's going to be no double kick, there's going to be, you know, no blast beats, no no metal. Going to be industrial electronic for the first record. And the second record, I was like, well, maybe let's just see what happens if I move the boundaries out a little bit. So there's some songs on the second record that are a little more metal. Could probably have been on a Becoming the Archetype record, except there's still no guitar on any Death Therapy songs, so no shredding, no solos. I like Becoming the Archetype days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I added some double kick, put some pretty heavy. There's like a 12-minute long epic at the end of the record, which is, that's more in my wheelhouse. But yeah, I mean, as a rule, my thing with Death Therapy has just been to kind of not try too hard and just sort of see what comes out, see what songs happen naturally. So.
Were all the drums on that record programmed as well, or are there any live drums on that record?
No, actually, yeah. So that's another thing. So they were live drums on the second record. So people who are listening and curious about the difference, they can check them out.
That's cool. It seems like you've moved some things in-house and taken on some marketing and promotion of your band. Have you parted ways with Solid State?
I mean, you know, it's one of those weird things where you don't talk about your contract with a label.
Okay.
But I think it's fair to say we had a contract, and that contract ended, it wasn't canceled or anything. It was a 2-album contract, and I think it's very possible that we'll work with Solid State in the future. They've always been really good to me. I don't have anything but good things to say about Brandon and Jim and Adam and the label. They're amazing. But at this point, reality strikes. It's March 2020, and we're all hoarding toilet paper and dealing with the coronavirus mess. So I've had a few things kind of on the, that I've been working on, two new EPs and a little book that I'm writing, a devotional kind of book, just about my experiences. But it sort of hit me like, okay, well, if I'm going to be out of work for a little while, I need to kind of go ahead and take a little of this into my own hands and, see if I can do some pre-orders and raise some money and basically make that my job, right now. So
yeah,
it remains to be seen if I'll release it independently. That's not my goal necessarily. Although I know a lot of bands that are doing that and it seems pretty cool. So we'll see.
Yeah. Is it kind of, an easy way to help, like, you help self fund the record and work on things yourself and then less to recoup with the label on that end?
Totally right. I mean, if I can essentially crowdfund the record, then it's, on my end and on the label's end, there's, it's paid for at that point. And the people who are the most excited about it get to, be a part of, get to be a part of making it happen. I think that's the most, that's the most appealing part of crowdfunding. There's obviously downsides to crowdfunding for, both sides. People don't like having to wait for their stuff, and people who have to fulfill all those incentives, it can be a burden. But I'm not, Death Therapy is not a humongous band, so we're not talking about raising millions of dollars. It's more like trying to get the core group of a few hundred or so people in the door early so that it can be paid for up front,
Yeah. Have you taken more of the role of doing the recording yourself in-house? Or is it still something where you're doing a lot of demo tracking and taking it out to a studio?
Yeah. So, so of the two EPs that I'm working on right now, one of them is pushing myself more to do it all myself. And so I'm doing an instrumental EP, and I've released a couple samples from that and stuff on social media. But I'm still in, working on that, making it happen. But yeah, I'm trying to do a lot of that myself. It's a lot of electronic music, and I think that's kind of the name of the game. I feel like if you don't self-produce your own electronic music, then you're not really making, if your black metal sounds like really polished and clean, it's not black metal,
Right.
So, I feel like I kind of need to do that, and it's fun, it's challenging. That's kind of been the story of Death Therapy, is it, puts me in different positions that are obstacles. I read a book one time where talking about producer Brian Eno, who's, very famous, worked with everybody, and how he famously would try to put obstacles, like, intentionally in the way while writing songs and stuff, and it would bring the best out. So I kind of do that in my own little way, putting myself in positions to do stuff that I haven't necessarily done before and trying to learn as I go. But the second EP I'm working on, and I've got about half of those songs tracked, tracking with a guy named Nate Washburn, who's in a band called My Epic, My Epic's awesome. And, and Nate's a great producer. And, so those songs will be tracked, with a producer in the studio kind of thing. A little bit of both.
Is that second record more of a traditional quote unquote Death Therapy sound?
Yeah, totally. The thing about, some people have asked me, why are you doing two EPs instead of just one record? And, I said, well, on both of the first two records, I had instrumental songs, and people would get bummed. Like, some people don't like instrumental songs. Some people are like, well, that just stinks. That's like two wasted tracks per album that, but then other people, those were their favorite songs. They really like instrumental music, and electronic stuff. So, I thought, well, why not just go full, effort at both things and give each group what they're looking for. So the second EP will be just, full blown Death Therapy songs, vocals, bass, drums, live drums kind of thing, keyboards. So yeah, it'll be no instrumentals on that one, I guess is what I'm saying. So people want the instrumental one, then they can really dig into that. If people don't, they can dig into the other stuff.
That's cool. What made you want to explore doing more electronica EDM type stuff?
Well, I've always liked that kind of stuff. The first Death Therapy record was actually really heavily industrial, Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson influenced, Rob Zombie kind of stuff. And for me, that all goes back to my love of video games. I grew up playing original NES 8-bit music, and I love electronic music. I love chiptune music. I love that kind of stuff in general. So I thought, why not give it a shot? And also, a lot of the electronic music that I hear, it doesn't necessarily reflect what I would want to make, which is a thing that I feel like most artists, they see a gap in the market, and they go, I would like to be the one to make it a little bit different. So, maybe, I don't know if, progressive EDM or progressive industrial is a thing per se, but maybe some of these songs are a little bit, they're a little outside the box. They're not what your typical, EDM guy would probably write. I don't know. It's interesting to me. We'll see if other people think so.
Yeah, you had mentioned to Travis with the first record that you didn't do any of the programming and synth stuff on that first Death Therapy record. Have you taken more of an interest in gotten your hands dirty in synths and software synths since then? Obviously, because you're doing this record, but
yeah, totally. And I'm still working with Brian. His name's Brian Wages. Is a good friend of mine who programmed keyboards on the first two records, but It's one of those things where, again, I'm going back to the putting obstacles in front of myself thing. I could have written the keyboards for the first record or the second record, but since this is a band that's essentially just my project, and I hire a drummer to play with me live, hire a keyboard player to play with me live, which is something that's changed maybe since the last time I talked to Travis for sure. We've been playing as a three-piece with a keyboard live, which is a lot of fun. But since it's just me, there's a part of me that thinks I want somebody else to be able to be involved. Even on the Voices record, by the way, going back to that, which was the second record, there's three guest vocalists on that record. So even though, again, it's like the Jason Wisdom band, I was like, how many people can I get involved in this to help, change it up? And part of the fun for me in doing that with the keyboards in the past has been sending an idea to Brian and saying, just do whatever, you know what I mean? Because then he's going to come up with something I never would come up with. I ultimately have the say in what gets to be kept or changed or whatever. So with the new stuff, the instrumental stuff, yeah, I'm writing a whole lot more of that myself. But I'm still passing it to Brian and saying, hey, you know, just put what you think's cool on here, and then doing a little bit more back and forth. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's not as hard as writing like it used to be when I was in a band with five people, you know, and everybody's got a strong opinion. That riff sucks. This is, you know, don't play that. That's a stupid drum beat, that kind of stuff, which is people who've been in a band know what that's like. So this is the best of both worlds. I get to collaborate with people, but it's, you know, it's not complicated.
What sort of direction do you see the new kind of traditional Death Therapy EP taking, similar to Voices, or?
I think it's probably a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a combination of the first two records. So I feel like every band goes through a phase of sort of finding themselves and finding who they are when they start out. I don't know if it takes two records, three records. I don't know what it takes, but in my case with Death Therapy, I feel like the first record I pushed in one direction pretty hard. Second record I sort of pushed in a different direction, but kept some of the things from the first direction. And now I feel like I have a better feel for what Death Therapy is.
Yeah.
You know, not so much like, oh yeah, I'd like to sound like, you know, this song, or I'd like to sound like this artist, but here's what Death Therapy can do uniquely. And how I want it to sound. Becoming the Archetype, my previous band, was kind of that way too. The third record that we did, which we recorded with Devin Townsend, which was the most amazing experience of my life as a musician, I feel like that's where we found who we were, that band. So we'll see how that goes this time. I've written, like I say, I've got about half the song, so I've got about like four or five songs written already for this new Death Therapy EP that'll come after the instrumental EP. And yeah, the songs are heavy. They're, in some ways they're heavier than the other stuff, but in some ways they're just more, you know, grungy rock. Here's another thing. You didn't ask this, but I'll throw this out there for anyone who listens to this. So the first 4 years of the band, when we toured, I would play with a very complicated set up where I would split my signal and play through a guitar amp and a bass amp on stage. So it's like I was almost faking a guitar. It's not fake because I'm actually playing it, but I'm using pedals and stuff. I'm not the only one who does that. Lots of people do that. But over the last few years, I've just come to the place where I'm like, you know what? I feel like people listen to my albums and they don't realize that it's just bass. I've done such a good job of tricking them to think it's guitar that it doesn't sound special. I kind of want bass players to know, hey, like, this is a bass player band, you know? Not that I have anything against guitar players, but yeah, so I think moving forward, one of my goals, and even when we play live now, I just play with a bass rig, and get a really nasty, you know, slightly octave bass sound for the gear nerds out there. But yeah, I mean, I kind of want it to sound more like a big nasty bass than, you know, a bass and a guitar. And I also think that, you know, the whole metal core thing, like I say, I came from that background, but that's not, I don't think that really fits Death Therapy. You know what I mean? I feel like the solid state crowd has kind of, like, I mean, by this, I mean the Solid State fan base is kind of not known what to do with Death Therapy because we don't play What Fit for a King plays or Silent Planet or Demon Hunter or you name it, you know, Norma Jean. We don't have giant breakdowns and metal, you know, metal sections and stuff. So I feel like I could say, well, let's just try to be more what they want, but that wouldn't be who I am. So I'm more the opposite of that. I'm like, well, hey, let's just go the other way, you know? So we'll see. I guess if anything's been true of my career, if you want to call it a career as a musician over the past 20 years, that I don't really write things that people expect me to write. And I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back. I'm saying people, I can't do that. I get bored. I kind of want to change it up, you know? So now I'm doing an EP of video game music because that's really interesting to me, you know, or it's not really video game music, actually. It's mostly just like electronic music. So we'll see where it goes.
The other thing you're currently offering for pre-order that people can help fund is a devotional. It's always a matter of life and death. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So people know this or don't know this, but I am I'm a Christian, and I have actually two master's degrees from seminary. So I studied theology. I have a master's degree in theology and a master's degree in apologetics. So that's a big deal to me. And I started actually about a year ago writing some chapters for just talking about what it's like to be a person of faith in the music industry. Toured with satanic bands, played in a satanic church in Wales, but also like, you know, just what is it like to be a creative person and struggle with that and, you know, just different stuff. So yeah, I mean, I just want to share some of my story with people, whether those people are Christians or not. So devotional is like is a terrible word for it because it sounds like it's going to be like a, you wake up in the morning and you go take a dump and you like read a chapter to motivate you for that morning, you know, kind of here's your morning devotional. But it's more like a collection of here's some of my thoughts on what it's been like to be on the road, to play in a band, to, you know, here's some thoughts on what does this song mean, because I get questions all the time, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. The title, It's Always a Matter of Life and Death, comes from a poem, and right now I'm drawing a blank. I don't know why, of course I would, drawing a blank on the author in this. But it comes from a poem. The idea is basically that to be an artist, to be a creative person, is like being a bird that's trapped in a room and is trying to find the window, trying to get out the window. It's like, it's a frantic thing. Like, I don't have a choice. I have to create. It's always a matter of life and death, it feels like. To try to create art. And I don't know if that's something everybody feels. Maybe everybody feels like I do. But I, you know, my wife looks at me like I'm crazy, you know. She's like, what did you do today? And I'm like, yeah. Well, I was working. It's like, well, what were you working on? I was writing a few songs. She's like, that's not work. And I'm like, it was a whole lot of work for me and I'm exhausted, you know. Anyhow. So that's the idea behind that. I'm trying to put those into a book and get them out there for people who want to read that kind of stuff.
That's cool. So you got a book you're working on. You got the two EPs you're currently working on. You got shirts up for pre-order right now. What else is in the future for Death Therapy?
We have a bunch of stuff scheduled to do this summer, touring and festivals and things like that that all start, you know, in May. And here we are now looking down the barrel of who knows what's going to happen. I sure hope that by May we're not dealing with any of this anymore, you know. But I know some places are saying up to 8 weeks. They're going to be postponing things or canceling events and gatherings. So we'll see. But yeah, the plan is to be out on the road a ton this summer, playing festivals all over the country. Each year we usually make at least one trip to Europe. That's not been planned yet, but hopefully that's coming up. So yeah, we're just going to try to stay on the road, try to keep writing stuff. And my goal would be, if I can write a couple EPs every year, I'd rather do that than, the old traditional, 2 year album cycle kind of thing. I'd rather create smaller chunks, 5, 6, 7 songs on an EP and be able to do those more often. To me, as an artist, that's kind of exciting, actually. Writing an album is a blast, especially as an old school metal guy. I love, high concepts records that are, an hour long. But there's also some excitement in being able to write a few tunes when you're in a certain headspace and then move on and come back and write some more tunes later. So.
Yeah, it seems like in this day and age, it makes more sense. Like, especially if you're not a full-time, you're not hitting the road for 2 years at a time for a cycle or a year and a half, it just makes sense. Like, if you could have, two EPs a year, singles throughout the year, like, it makes more sense as an independent artist to always have something for people.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I guess to a certain extent, I think it comes down to the fact that the playing field is more level. Everybody says it's because the industry sucks and just streaming has ruined everything and, the industry's garbage now. I've been in both. I was in the early 2000s sort of glory days of the old scene in metal, when we could go play in a basement somewhere in Nebraska for 1,000 people. Not because anyone cared about us, but just because that's the way the scene was around the country in the mid-2000s. I was there, and now I'm here, and I've been in a band, both times. And I would say, actually, the playing field is more level now. If anything, there's more opportunity probably for me to get my music in front of more people and to bigger audiences through things like Spotify and playlists and stuff. It doesn't make it easy. We haven't had really any luck with that, personally. We haven't been on any big editorial playlists and stuff or anything. But my point is that also it puts us all in the same old grind that pop artists and country artists and radio artists used to have to go through, which is if you're not putting out relevant content regularly, people forget about you. It didn't used to be that way in the underground scene. It was you could put out a record and tour for 3 years and just play little tiny clubs and just that was the life, but now we all, the market is all oversaturated, whether you're hip-hop or EDM or rock or metal or whatever, you can reach people, you gotta stuff coming. So
yeah,
unless you're Metallica, and then please don't keep making stuff. Just tour and play the hits.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never felt so young and alive as when I'm diving into a tomb. And now I'm learning as I listen along, and the wheels are turning, and I started a song. Just